So all year we've been practicing with the Paramis. Oh, good. The little one is sleeping peacefully. Great. And July is we are starting on a new Parami, the Parami of Patience. Generally, I don't know, for those of you who come often, you might have noticed that we usually do a kind of a process where we spend the first Sunday introducing the Parami, then the next two or three talks are adding the different Dharmic perspectives and for that Parami, and then we usually end the month with practical practice suggestions. But some months ago, we were checking in with one of our guiding teachers, Tim Guile, and he said, he actually suggested we might want to start with practice suggestions. So that's what I'm going to do this morning. I'll give just a real short intro to the topic, and then in the next 3 weeks, Lyndall, Lauren, and Jerry will add to that. And I'm going to be focusing on three areas of practice. So, a short intro. In Pali, patience is known as kanti. And there are a few ways that this word patience is defined: to persevere, to calmly tolerate, to endure without complaint. And the definition that really works best for me is to bear with. The analogy that's often used in the practice is to define patience as if it's a cart and it bears the weight of its load, just like we bear the weight of our lives, of all that arises and passes away. We need patience in order to bear this load. Patience is often referred to as one of the most important of the Paramis. We've been quoting four or five different teachers all year, so I'll do a little bit of that again. Ajahn Suchito says that patience is the supreme purification practice. The specific quality of patience, he says, is to carry the heart through the turbulence of existence so that it, the heart, no longer shakes, sinks, or lashes out. Norman Fisher, who in his book, because of his being a Zen priest, he talks a lot about bodhisattva practices, and he says, without patience, all the others will fail. This past Monday night, Tiweri, one of our two guiding teachers, talked about the Parami of patience, and she talked about all of the Paramis this way. She said the first four of generosity, morality, renunciation, and wisdom act together to light the fire of the heart. She said that it's the heart that leads us in these practices of the Paramis, and it's a heart that is fierce, steady, strong, and stout. Then the fifth Parami of energy that we talked about last month, when it's in balance, it primes us for action. And it's the kind of right energy that many weeks ago Arv defined in such a wonderful way. He used the analogy of writing a picture on a wall, making it aligned and balanced, not right or wrong. So patience comes next after this right energy. And Tiweri said it's the first of the Paramis that leads us into action. And the action is that it sees and accepts the world just as it is. It's the quality of the heart mind that allows us to experience life just as it is, to accept the moment without expectation. So Lyndall, Lauren, and Jerry will be adding to this, but now I want to spend the majority of my talk time on these arenas for practice. I'm going to talk about it in three ways. First, what I call kind of the natural laws of life. Second, patience with self. And lastly, patience in relationships and with other people. So before I get to the natural laws of the Dharma, and of course the two I'm going to talk about are anicca, or impermanence, and the first of the Four Noble Truths, I want to share a couple examples, real practical examples, just from regular life. So I live in a warehouse, and my apartment is on the second floor, and you walk up 23 stairs. So a year ago, I installed a chairlift so that when I need it, I can age in place. This chairlift really is a teacher. It only goes as fast as it was designed to go, and no faster. My wanting it to speed up has absolutely no effect on it. And then there's my garden. The pollination will happen in its time. Yeah, I plant things that attract pollinators, but how and when they do their job, really not up to me. The growth of the green leaves and the fruit will happen in its own time. I've been wishing for ripe tomatoes here at the beginning of July because I have all these ripe cucumbers, and I would love to have cucumber tomato salad, but it's foolishness. Throughout nature, we see these natural laws which really combine to encourage us to just be with life as it unfolds. And then there's all these natural laws about our practice. You know, we find the right balance of energy and diligence and relaxation, and we see how our practice flourishes. But we might want a certain kind of sit. And then the mind-body circumstances offer the sit we get. Many of us have had this experience where you save up vacation time, you do all of the necessary arrangements for pets and family and whatever things that need to be taken care of, and you go on a meditation retreat. And of course, you want samadhi, you want this quiet, collected mind, not too sleepy, not too restless. But guess what? You know, we get what we get. And even some of our most revered teachers have shared stories of really difficult retreats. Joseph Goldstein, I love his story of the retreat where the entire retreat was one of fear. And then Tiwari has shared over the years stories of her own evolution of the practice around anger. And sometimes it's been rough. Of course we have agency. We have choices. We sit, we practice, we investigate, we study, and we bring all the patience that we can. We bear with what shows up, and all of that helps. And in the end, life will unfold, practice will unfold as it will. The Buddha's teachings are filled with his understanding of natural laws of life, and I'm going to discuss two. Anicca and the First Noble Truth. Tiwari, in her talk last Monday, and I know I keep referring to it, but it was such a good talk, and it may not be up on the website yet, but it will be in a few days, so really listen to it. She talked about the eight worldly winds, which I'm not going to cover. Anicca. Many of us have this chant in our practice that goes like this. I'm not going to sing it, but it's, all things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be at peace with this truth brings great happiness. Anicca. As Tiwari mentioned last Sunday, all things that arise will pass away. It's not just some things, it's all things. And you know, I talk a lot about the five recollections, and the fourth one, which says this, everything and everyone I hold dear is of the nature to change. I will become separate from all I hold dear. Recently, well, some months ago, I noticed that when reciting that fourth recollection, I tried inserting the words, I may become separate from all I hold dear. And that was BS. It was delusion. It wasn't the truth. In fact, I will become separate from all I hold dear. Guaranteed. if not sooner, by my death and the death of others. Sylvia Boorstein, one of the teachers that we've been quoting this year, who has such a soft, gentle way of presenting the Dharma, she suggests we practice with the truth of Anicca by what she calls abiding. By understanding, and she uses these words, this will change and it cannot be otherwise. She adds, when bad things happen, when hard things happen, wait, think it over. For her, patience is a way of being kind to herself in the midst of discomfort. She says this, the rope that I thought I was at the end of disappears. It turns out to be imaginary. The kindness, though, is not imaginary. It makes a difference. The kindness steadies the mind. Sylvia also talks about cheering the mind. The mind, she says, cheered up, remembers that it is worrying that things won't turn out well because they aren't happening on time, and that the current discomfort will never end. It, the cheered up mind, also remembers, because of our practice, that on time is an idea we've made up so that our calendars work, and the discomfort will end. Everything will end. Patience is the best tool for working with the First Noble Truth of Dukkha. We really need patience to stay with, to bear with all that is unpleasant, uncomfortable, frightening, difficult. We bring a gentle, tender, understanding patience. Those of you who've read Philip Moffitt's book, Dancing with Life, or Ajahn Sumedho's teachings, where they talk about the 12 insights of the Four Noble Truths, for each of the Noble Truths, there are three steps. The first is kind of a philosophical acceptance. You know, you read about, you hear about the definition of dukkha, you realize that life elicits a lot of feelings of unsatisfactoriness, kind of at every turn. And your mind says, oh yeah, that's correct. Then you practice with it and you gain insights into your suffering by really penetrating it with our conscious awareness, our presence, day by day, moment by moment. It's what we learn in our sitting practice. And then we take our cushion into life and we see the unpleasant. We see how we try to push it away. And that actually makes it stay longer. And then we see the pleasant and how we try to hold on and to cling, and it makes things more difficult. So we stay with, we bear with each of these arisings of experience, investigate and understand. And through this diligent, committed practice, we deeply accept the truth that dukkha is part of our lives and that it affects how our mind reacts to all experience. Tiwari said that patience allows us to accept life as it is. When we deny or resist the experience of our suffering, this comes from Philip Moffitt's book, we are unwilling to consciously bear it. It's this resistance to accepting our life as it is that makes suffering so awful, ignoble, despicable, shameful. That first insight, that first step of where we carry our suffering without judgment, without resistance, we bear with it with compassion and mindfulness in our heart. When it's realized, when we really carry that truth of unsatisfactoriness, of dukkha, we are able to distinguish between carrying the weight of our life with all of its pain, as opposed to collapsing underneath these difficulties. When we learn to be with the truth of our suffering and the suffering of those we care about, in a mindful and compassionate manner, we are ennobled. I love how Philip has described, you know, why are they called the Four Noble Truths? And it's because when we really realize the truth of them, we are ennobled. And so with so many of these teachings, we go right back to basics. Suffering is to be known. Suffering, it's a tangle, physical and emotional, all tangled up together. We know suffering, we know the ouch of it. We go from just that intellectual understanding to the felt sense of it. In our practice, we often use these words like, this moment is like this. Back pain feels like this. Anger feels like this. Restlessness feels like this. Fear feels like this. And we bring patience to stay with how each of these arisings actually feels in the body, mind, and heart. And then Philip says, he defines nibbana or liberation in this beautiful way. He says, the pains of life don't disappear, but their ability to burn you ceases. So there's so much about the natural laws of life in our teachings. I'd also like to suggest some practices for bringing patience to ourselves and to relationships. So the self. Yeah, I know we're supposed to be dealing with the not self, but here we are with our egos and our feelings and our lives. So how do we bear with this self as it shows up in each moment? I think patience is calling for us to accept ourselves with such a deep acceptance of who I am right now in this moment, with all my habits and conditioning, with all the life experiences I've had, with all the joys and sorrows, with all the really skillful, wonderful things I've done, and with all the things that I regret. A deep, deep acceptance. And it's not a mindless acceptance. It's not saying, oh, anything goes. It's an acceptance with our eyes wide open. We know when we're diligent in our practice. We know when we've been living aligned with our own ethical ground, with our own sense of morality, with the precepts. And within this clear picture, with our eyes wide open, we bear with who shows up. This is who I am and how I am showing up right now. It couldn't be otherwise. If it could, it would be. Along with this attitude of deep acceptance, we add the practice of non-judging. Open to the natural unfolding of life, not adding schedules or have-to outcomes, a lot of goals and expectations. And it's not apathy or giving up. Of course we have agency. We have choices. We make them all the time. But we set aside a certain kind of result. And as a result, the mind can stay steady and stay with whatever has shown up. Another practice takes us back a couple paramis to the parami of renunciation. And I think that part of patience is renouncing the habit of hurrying. We're patient with time and how it evolves. I recently had a great reminder of this. I mostly like classical music and jazz, but I got a new car and it comes with this classic rock and roll station. So I recently listened to an old Doobie Brothers song called Black Water. You probably, some of you who are my age will recognize it. And the words are, I ain't got no worries because I ain't in no hurry. And there's so much wisdom right there. If we're hurrying around from this to that to the next thing and encouraging other people to move fast and hurrying, it's really hard to be patient. When impatience shows up, a good question to ask ourselves is, what am I getting out of this impatience? Sometimes when I'm driving, and this is probably true for most of us, our impatience just seems to rise right up to the surface. When I looked at it, I realized that my impatience on the road feeds my sense that my well-being is more important than your well-being. Getting to my destination on time is way more important than you getting to your destination on time. So it takes us back to those other paramis and how they're all connected. What is our sense of ethics? Do we remember that we're all in this together? Norman Fisher suggests some really good things about practicing with patience in daily life. And he says, really practice with frustration. Pay attention to all the moments when jars, packages, doors, or windows won't open easily. When there's irritation with traffic, when hardware and software malfunction when you really need it. When people who seem too slow or too picky or they don't listen. Notice them as frustrations and label them as that. And then when you're quiet and you have your whole list of frustrations, check the thoughts and actions that are associated with it. Check the beliefs that come up about, I'm frustrated and therefore you should be different. Really? The goal, he says, is not to make the frustrations go away, although in his experience they likely will, but to study them, to appreciate them. Another teacher we've been using a lot is Gail Stark, and she has some really good suggestions. She suggests that you track the number of times you experience impatience, maybe even keep a little journal. What types of experiences seem to give rise to it? And then what mind states are associated with it, like restlessness or rushing or frustration? And then go deeper. Look how impatience arises from a choice in the mind, not only because of those triggering situations. Pay attention to those times when you consciously decide to be patient or when you are naturally patient. Often that's true for many of us with little ones, with little babies and toddlers. See if you can catch the moment when patience becomes impatience and when impatience becomes patience. And as with all of these practices, quoting Philip Moffitt again, we do the best we are able in each moment. Spending the last few minutes about relationships. So I'd like you to take a moment and bring to mind someone who's important in your life. You know them pretty well. You care about this person, but they often show up as a difficult person, annoying, bugging. Just, you know, you have those conflicts with them. So I'll give you a minute. Bring both the name and the image, if you can, of that person to mind. And then I want to offer this mantra that I've been using. I'm going to use the name Joe. So I bring this Joe into my mind with his face, and I say, let Joe be Joe. Let Barbara be Barbara. Let Julie be Julie. Let Rosie be Rosie. Let Suze be Suze. You might want to offer it to yourself. And as you practice with this, see what happens with everything that arises next to it. There might be some argument. Well, yeah, except that Joe does this. See where there's that kindness, where there's that care for Joe. I recently had a weekend with a friend, a long-standing friend. Her husband and my husband were best friends, so we've known each other 30-plus years. But now that both of these men are dead, we're establishing our own one-on-one friendship. I've known for years that there are real significant differences in how we live, the things that bug us, the behaviors, perspectives, opinions, all of that. And I watched Friday night as these differences were really bugging me. going very quickly to annoyance and judgment. So early Saturday morning, I sat. And the first thing I did is I asked myself, how can I hold these differences without judging, without comparing and fixing and keeping her separate? She's a smart, capable adult, perfectly able of living her life, which she's been doing for a long time without my interference. Can I bring patience, in this case, just letting her be her? Can I bear with her differences without complaint, without judging? Can I let patience transform my annoyed, judging mind into one of the affection and kindness and deep caring I feel for this person? Actually, just asking the question helped. My annoyance, my judging didn't go away, but I reconnected to some of my aspirations, which you probably have similar ones. I want to relate to this friend and to most people in my life with an attitude of peace, understanding, and kindness. So these thoughts of impatience, they continue to come up, but right alongside them were the thoughts and experiences of connection and caring. So as you think about these so-called difficult people, and also the people you would never put in that category, but they might annoy you at times, think about what role patience might play in your relationship to them. In closing, I want to say a couple things about how patience has transformative powers. Norman Fisher loves to talk about transformation, and he's one of my favorite teachers. He says, first of all, that suffering is transformative and expansive. When we realize that suffering is ours, not mine, the suffering is transformed into solidarity and love. When we get out of that little self, or maybe it's the big self, and we realize that the suffering of disappointment and the suffering of loss and sadness and fear is really our suffering, not just mine, that suffering is transformed into solidarity and love. He also suggests that cultivating patience is transformative. He suggests a practice that comes from one of the Bodhisattva vows, and from Dogen, an ancient Zen teacher. Dogen says, reduce your practice of patience to two simple practices. First, just keep going, no matter what happens. And I think what that means is just keep practicing, no matter what happens. And second, be a benefit to others. From the very beginning of my practice, I was taught, and I have come to believe, that we never practice for ourselves alone. Just as what we say in our Sunday morning community statement, that by freeing our minds of greed, hatred, and delusion, we offer this opportunity for others to do the same, and we can help reduce ignorance and hatred in the world. We practice for all of us. These are difficult times we live in, and I've come to see how much the world needs us. The world needs our practices of mindfulness, of kindness, morality, wisdom, renunciation, compassion, and especially patience. Thank you so much for your attention. It's such a rich topic. We could spend more than a month on it, I'm sure. So, a few people have left. There's 20 of us. And I know we always go into breakout groups. I just thought I would check with people. Do you want breakout groups or do you want full group? Raise your hands if you want, or if you want breakout groups. Let me just see. Oh, and how about you'd be good with having a full group discussion? Raise your hands for that. And then there are people who don't raise their hands. Okay. If we do full group discussion, I really want to offer this guidance. I'm a talker. Everybody who's known me all these years knows when I'm in a breakout group, I yada yada and stuff. If I were doing this morning as a member of this, and if I know that I'm an easy talker in a big group, I'm going to wait and let those for whom it's not as easy to step forward. So let's just try it. And if it's a bust, we won't do it again. So here are my prompts. Well, and actually, there's so many prompts from the talk. How is impatience serving you if that's one of those habits that you really recognize? And what do you get out of it? How was that mantra of offering let Joe be Joe to a difficult person in your life? Or what's your general relationship to patience and impatience? We've got a good 20 plus minutes, I think, and there's only 20 of us. I think we have plenty of time to give people an opportunity, speak from the heart. Okay, I don't know why something is happening here. Sorry, on my screen. I will just let it happen. So you can go to the raise hand function at the bottom of your screen and it'll come up as a little yellow hand. You can also go like this, and then you'll be able to unmute and share. How is this being with patients, and are there any practices you think you might take on? Because we're going to get to spend the whole month on it. So I offered we're going to have large group and then it'll be quiet. We'll see. Anybody have anything they feel like they could say? And I'm happy to break us out into breakout rooms if that feels more comfortable, because I know it's always easier to talk just a couple people. Lillian and Nikhil, thank you very much for, can you unmute? Great. Hi, Nikhil.
Hi. I really appreciated your talk, and I think it's interesting timing talking about patient for me, because recently something I've been trying to practice a lot with is roughing, and just kind of being aware of how frequently Russian kind of just takes place in my daily life. And I think
I'm having a little trouble understanding you. Maybe lean forward and speak just a little slower.
Is it a little easier to hear me now?
Yes.
Cool. I've been trying to work with, just be aware of Russian in daily life recently. So I think it'll be interesting to be talking about patience for this month. I think something I've been trying to be aware of recently is just kind of going back to the body sensation of what do I feel when I'm brushing, because I think so often brushing is present and it takes place in such small, seemingly insignificant moments where I'm trying to turn on the faucet to wash my hands. And I've recently realized that I get the sensation in my chest, this kind of anxiety or this the sensation, which it's rushing. And I typically have never even noticed it. And just being aware of all the different places that rushing kind of takes place and exists that I haven't been aware of it before. And then I think also noticing that there can be kind of stillness and just noticing the rushing. And kind of the awareness of it and just kind of seeing it take place, that that on its own kind of alleviates it. And so, yeah, I think it's, it feels maybe somewhat related to patience for me as well, for, you know, not just having patience with the fact that rushing keeps appearing even after I've noticed it, but, you know, patience with just patience with the rushing, I guess, in a way.
And so, I love that. I look forward to also hearing how this evolves for you. What a fabulous practice. And to notice that there's a sensation in the body that when you're rushing, and it's not as if you can't do things quickly. That's a, it's, you know, there's a difference. So, wow, that sounds very rich. Thank you for sharing that.
And I think what you mentioned about it doesn't mean that you can't do things quickly. That's, I think that's something I've been trying to be aware of as well, right? It's not the rate or the pace, it's the mentality or the sensation of it.
Yes, yeah. Thank you so much, Nikhil. Judith, I think you're next, and then there's someone else be after. Thank you for sharing.
Hi. So thinking about your let Joe be Joe, et cetera, I realized a few years ago that everybody on this planet is irritating without exception. And so if, including me, I irritate myself even. And so if I'm going to have any relationships with anybody, it's going to be with irritating people. And that has helped me so much in my relationships. I mean, like yesterday I spent the day with my sister and a very close friend. And these are people I dearly love and I'm very close to, and they do frequently irritate me, especially my sister. And I irritate them as well. And and we've gotten to a point where we just laugh about it. And I told them, you know, of my realization. They said, oh, that's true. That is so true.
Yeah.
And I just, okay, well, yeah, they're just being irritating. That's fine. So am I. And it's okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. And it's, you know, going back to that definition of bearing with irritation. What happens when we're irritated? You know, it's not a fatal disease. No. It's a moment of mind not liking. It's a moment of vedana, of irritation, of unpleasant. Thank you, Judith. That's just beautiful. Lauren, please.
In listening to what people have said and thinking about impatience and irritation, that there's a connection between impatience and irritation. I can really see that. And I can see that I get very impatient with myself and irritated with myself, and I get impatient with other people and irritated with other people who, as you described, I care about deeply. So what's going on? And I thought of control. And I thought that there's a control issue that has to do with the irritation, because that impatience is I want to, you know, things to go my way. I think that's one of the things that Ajahn Suchito was saying is key to patience. And if you're patient, you can let go and not have things go your way. So I think it's being confronted with my lack of control that I really can't control. So it's a lot to do with selfing. So I'm going to look at that. And when you suggested that Gail Stark said, track your impatience and the mind state associated with it, and then follow that with when it can turn to patience and vice versa, that really, I thought, oh yeah, that's very interesting. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Lauren, that issue of control. And, you know, just when we remember that this is our experience, it's not personal. Like the people on the road, you know, I go, why are all you people out on the road? Well, right. Why am I there? Because I want to get somewhere, you know, and we're all in that same boat. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Lyndall.
Thank you, Suze. I really appreciated your talk today with all these suggestions about how to work with patients. And I think this is going to help me a lot in the next week. And one of the things that I was aware of with impatience is that, you know, I feel impatience with situations that happen and with other people. But there's often a way in which I'm able to sort of tell myself, yes, this will change, you know, those kind of things. But I find that I have a lot more trouble being patient with myself. But somehow there's this feeling that it is about selfing, like Lauren was saying, you know, there's this feeling like I ought to be able to control this since it's about me. And a little of not really recognizing that all things arise according to causes and conditions, even my ability to respond to certain situations. So I think that's one area where I'm going to be especially trying to pay attention and just notice the ways in which I keep insisting I ought to be able to do this, I should have done this, so on and so on and so forth. Even though
I ought to be better in this moment than I am.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what's coming through my mind.
Mm-hmm. I may have told this story before, but my partner, Bill, we were together 35 years. 6 days a week, I would get written on the back of a used envelope, a new name. Some of the names were peculiar, you know, but they were all kind of lovey names, you know, and I have, since he's died, I have accepted one of those names, and I call myself that name when the critical comes up. When I go upstairs to do something and then I get upstairs and I can't remember, or if I've broken something or just, you know, missed an appointment or whatever the natural things of screw ups. And I use that name and everything softens. So I offer that you might name yourself something sweet, mm-hmm. some little loving, accepting, I'm okay kind of name, and just soften, just, you know, and even make it silly. Silly is good. Silly helps. Anyone else want to share anything at all? Jean, please.
I have waited 6 long months for patience to show up in the teachings. I remember in January sitting next to Deb Silvinsky saying, well, looking at the list and saying, well, the one that I need work on is patience. And I have to wait X amount of time. And she looked at me and said, well, the one that I'm interested in is equanimity, and that comes last. So my irritation immediately dropped. And I think this is going to be an incredibly rewarding month for me personally. Because there's so much to explore in it. And I wanted to just share this thought that's taped to the side of my monitor. Irritation lives in the gap between what you have and what you want. Just a thought.
Wow. Rich, that's, yeah. There's a lot to explore in this one. And I love that story because your irritation, Jean's irritation, became our irritation where you and Deb both shared it. And I think there is something about realizing, like Judith said, we're all irritating. We're all somebody's difficult person, you know, at least one. And we don't have to, you know, go there. But yeah, thanks, Jean. And good luck in this. I think It's going to be a rich time, I know. Lillian, did you want to share something, please?
Thank you. I think I appreciated the offering of let dough be dough. And I think what came up for me with that was the difficulty I have when judgment arises with that, because I think sometimes I have this sense that why should I let so-and-so be him or herself when he or she is infringing on my ability to be myself, or trying, infringing, is not letting Lillian be Lillian. I perceive that he or she was not. And I think that relates a lot for me to the question that you asked about how is impatience serving us, because to me, it all comes back to this sense that, like, my agenda is the one that, like, most people in the world should follow. And even when it comes to, like, letting others be others, I should only do that to prove that I'm the most dharma-y of them all, and, like, to, like, get this sense that, like, I practice more so I can let you have that. And I think with impatience too, it just, the reason that it keeps arising for me is related to that big, strong self that keeps coming up. So I really appreciate that prompt and that suggestion that you had. Thank you.
Thanks, Lillian. You know, I just want to take a moment and celebrate what happens in Sangha, even though we've been on Zoom now for a long time. And many of us only met each other on Zoom. We've never met in person. But listen to the willingness to be so vulnerable and real with each other. There's something about the element of trust that is so inherent in Sangha. No wonder we can take refuge in Sangha, because here's this beautiful sharing that says, life's hard. You know, so thank you. And Sue, please.
I have a 10-year-old golden retriever who was a wild woman. She was kind of a crazy dog when I got her. And so we flunked out of several puppy schools. And finally found someone who taught me how to be a good mom. She is now older, and I can really tell that she is slowing down. And I find that I practice patience with every walk. And it's at least 3 times a day, and that, you know, she needs to smell everything. I need to let her do that. And and when I find that I'm not patient, I find that I'm immediately irritated and like, I know I'm in charge of the walk, not you. And I have to let go of that. And I have to remember, she's an old lady, and so am I. So, and there she is, who knows. But that it's, you know, it's a daily practice in patience, and to just stop and relax, and just enjoy and smell. And it might be a little bit late for something, but we'll get there. So.
Wow. Thank you. You know, the natural law of pets. Also the natural law of aging bodies and minds.
Yeah.
And bringing a sense of bearing with, of patience to our own aging bodies and minds, those of our loved ones. Of course we want the moment to be different than it is. We're human, and that's what the mind does, right? You know, it doesn't do it all the time, but it does it a lot. And to bear with the mind that says, this ain't okay. I want something else. I'm going to share something that I haven't asked permission from, but Sometimes when my dearest friend Rosie asks me the same question again in a text about a group we're in, I feel this, ah, and then I remember how much I love Rosie. You know, so really, what am I getting out of the impatience? What am I getting out of saying this moment should be otherwise? Life should be otherwise. People shouldn't die. You know, my knees shouldn't hurt. You know, we could just have quite the list here. I'm sure everybody could fill in the blank of what shouldn't be happening. And life unfolds as it unfolds. And isn't it miraculous? And you know, and sometimes it's icky, and so much of the time it's beautiful. It's miraculous and amazing. And we have that choice. I loved how Tiwary presented the first six paramis, that they all built up the strength and stoutness of the heart, so that then we got energy and we got that all right and balanced. And now we're ready to act, and we're ready to really accept life as it shows up. Liz, please.
Hopefully you can hear me. Can you hear me? All right, sweet. Like Jean, I've been like waiting for patience, patiently waiting for patience. definitely something that has, been of interest to me, you know, being somebody that has kind of struggled in times with anxiety. I've noticed that that is an internal thing that I can be aware of in terms of patience. And also, I've noticed it within my job. My job place is pretty fast paced, and we deal with a lot of people. And I've just been noticing, I thought this was also interesting regarding like still being able to be quick, but with patience, because when I can center back into that patience, which is sometimes hard to remember, I can be spread a better, bring the us back to it instead of the pushing and that struggle and that irritation with people. And then I feel like everybody almost comes together in a much better place. Anyways, there's so many things I could go on about. My head's just spinning with the whole idea of patience, and your talk was absolutely wonderful. So thank you.
You're welcome. And it's so rich. I think a lot of us, have found that patience, or rather impatience, has been a very well-developed habit in our lives. And you know, I learned how to drive in Detroit, Michigan. Impatience comes right along with the car. And you go fast, and you don't let other people in. And it was like, that's how I was learned how to drive. So we all have our ways that we learned impatience. And for many of us, we're pretty good at it. You know, that irritation just happens. Boom! We barely have to think about it. It just, the habit is alive and well. And we have options. I really appreciate that Tiwary talked about the aspects of this action that patience allows us. And one of them is conscious choices. And when we go back to the basics of the Dharma, the truth of Anicca, the truth of the First Noble Truth, or all four of them, of course, we go, oh, right. Everything that arises will pass away. To be at peace with this truth brings great happiness. That's an alternative to the anxiety and the tightness that happens with impatience. Being with life as it evolves, and it's a moment by moment thing, because then there are moments when we're not. All we can think about is how this should be different. And then if we can, we go, oh, right, impatient mind. That's what's up. I can be okay with this. I'm doing fine. I'm doing the best I can, the best we are able in any moment. That kindness, that caring, that soft patience, it's not like, for those of you who joined us at our day long on the Brahma Viharas, I loved when Jerry was talking about scolding. And he says, when has scolding worked? When has it worked to scold yourself because you're not this and you are too much that? And so instead of scolding, deep acceptance. This is who I am right now. So thank you so much, everybody, for participating in that. And feel free to give us feedback as to whether you really would have preferred the small group and we shouldn't do this again. I've got some announcements. Many of you were able to attend our lovely open house and ceremony last Sunday in our new home. In a few weeks, we are going to be hanging these blessing flags. We have two areas of the ceiling that are a little lower, and they're going to be putting all our best juju into that space. So for those of you who weren't able to come, if you write to Suze@SeattleInsight.org, send me your 1 to 4 words. It can be more words, but not a treatise. Just kind of your simple, what's the blessing for our new home? I will make them for you and add them to it. Next Sunday, Lyndall is teaching, and that's going to be the Sunday where we're going to keep the Zoom open for an extra 30 minutes. So maybe put that in your calendar. We've got a bunch of things happening. Caverly Morgan is coming later in July. She's the founder of Peace in Schools in Portland, Oregon, which started 4-credit mindfulness classes in 4 or 5 high schools in Portland. She now lives up on Whidbey. She's not connected with Peace in Schools anymore, and she's a lovely person. You'll see all of this on the calendar, along with Narayan Liebenson is coming in September. We've got all of the different sits, the under 40, the BIPOC, the LGBTQI, the drop-in sits Tuesday and Thursday. Check the website. Just a quick mention about Donna. Seattle Insight is a totally volunteer organization. The teachings are offered freely, and it's a relationship. Our guiding teachers, Tim Tewari and Carrie, the Donna is their livelihood. You can also do Donna by volunteering. It is the best way of getting to know people. So that's the announcements. And let's just take a moment to appreciate this morning, the sit, talking about one of the paramis, the sharing that people did. And maybe we can end with the last phrase of the metta phrases that Philip Moffat always uses, which I find to be so beautiful. And it's this: may we know love, joy, wonder, and wisdom in this life just as it is.